Professor X had requested that Harvey Lewis return for a further interview. This he did with intermingled feelings of suppressed excitement and anticipation of some important disclosures, perhaps the conclusion of his search. But there was also trepidation associated with the incident. In the end, would it all prove to be futile? As Harvey finally left the office of the professor following the eventful interview, he recalled certain words in particular which the latter had spoken. The words seemed to be emblazoned in his consciousness. Over and over again, they resounded in his mind. "And now, if you find it convenient to visit the south of France and can take the 7:10 train from Avignon on Tuesday evening, you will find further instructions at your destination. This is all the advice I may give you now." Then Harvey further recalled that as he was about to leave, the professor showed him a picture. It was an attractive etching. Harvey, having always been interested in art, had admired this etching. However, it was not the art subject itself which registered so in his memory, but the professor's parting words as he showed the etching. "Among the many beautiful sights you may see while in this country is this one. You see here only a material representation of a spiritual place. This old tower, a very old building, is one of the truly great French monuments. Some day you may see this tower. Then remember that I have called your attention to it. I believe that you will always cherish a view of it." There was a subtle suggestion that Harvey's view of the tower would have more than a scenic or artistic importance to him. Fortunately, if it were fortune, Harvey's father, Aaron, was obliged by his professional affairs to journey to southern France as well. And so on Tuesday, at the time the professor had indicated, Harvey was on the train passing through the beautiful and historic countryside of southern France. The great vineyards, quaint villages, and meticulously cultivated farmlands passed in review as he gazed intently out of his compartment window. It was Harvey's first journey to Europe, and so he was determined that the experience should be indelibly impressed upon his memory.
"I was lost in the scene, enraptured by it. And then, in a deep, sonorous voice, I heard the words, 'The annual conclave at Lyon? Are you going there?' I feared to look around. I feared to take my eyes from the paper, but I seemed to feel the presence of someone, a strange presence, an almost recognizable presence. And I did look up from my map to gaze right into the smiling countenance of my foreign friend from the steamer."
This was the beginning of a series of adventures in which Harvey Lewis was tested. He was directed from city to city in southern France, as he relates in his historical account of the Rosicrucian Order. Different personages to whom he was directed, and who identified themselves in a manner of which he had been previously informed, encouraged him to journey on. Harvey relates,
"And all these mysterious elements were designed to tax my patience, to discourage me, to tempt me to be rash in some way. My sincerity was being tried."
Then, one of these persons in a humble capacity, whom it seemed he chanced to meet, gave him a folded paper, passing it on without comment.
"The folded paper bore this message in English: 'Journey tonight to Toulouse. Register at the Grand Hotel Tivolier. Visit the Gallery of the Illustrious at 10 a.m. Thursday morning and meet Monsieur such and such, the eminent photographer. Prepare to remain at the hotel 1 week. Communicate with no one but your relatives and say nothing of your plans. Communicate with Mr. So-and-so from Chicago, who is editor now of the Toulouse newspaper. Peace."
Again, circumstances contrived. Or was it some enigmatic plan which Harvey was fulfilling that so arranged his father's affairs that he, too, was obliged to journey to Toulouse? Nevertheless,
Wednesday found me again on the train en route to Toulouse.
Toulouse is one of the very old cities of France. Harvey recalled from the tourist literature at his disposal that the city is on the banks of the Garonne, the river down which the Norsemen sailed to make their attacks on Toulouse in the sack of France. The romantic history of the city, which he was to visit, was in itself an exciting anticipation. The Grand Hotel Tivolier, to which he had been directed, was an exclusive establishment. One of the type of European hotels whose luxurious appointments simulate the splendor of castles of the past, or great chateaux of the present. Toulouse was a center for American and English tourists who had decided that there was far more to France than famed Paris. The dining hall, with its late dinner, was the social event of the day. Harvey looked about at these guests, half suspecting, half hoping for some sign of recognition. Did any of these persons have the same experience as he himself? Then he had a sudden, disconcerting thought. Could they possibly be on the same mission as he himself? Might they be selected to make the contact he had so long hoped for? After a rather sleepless night caused by imagining what the morrow might bring forth, at the designated hour of 10 a.m., Harvey was at the Gallery of the Illustrious.
It is a public building, but admission is by special ticket. It was built by architects and builders who donated their work. It is the one aim of every great artist of the south of France to someday be worthy, in his line, of donating a masterpiece to this Hall of the Illustrious.
Harvey's love of art, which ordinarily would have caused him to concentrate all his attention upon the exhibit, was now distracted by the purpose of his visit. He had been told by the one who had surreptitiously given him the note of instruction that Monsieur Such-and-Such, the eminent photographer, would meet him here. In his anxiety for this meeting, he was becoming impatient. Harvey knew that he must not reveal his impatience, yet where was this person?
But I did not know him until I first saw that same strange sign which a young man had given me in Montpellier. Then I approached him.
Harvey identified himself to the eminent personage, explaining how he had been directed to him. He then began to relate his hopes and his aspirations. This dignitary answered him in rapid French. Harvey knew some French, but was not as fluent as was his father, whose mother was a Frenchwoman. Monsieur So-and-so could ascertain that Harvey was not comprehending all that he said, so he resorted to writing on a small pad which he took from his pocket. Harvey could read the language more extensively than he could speak it, and thus a fair degree of communication was established between the two men. Harvey was chagrined to hear from him what now seemed to be a pattern of further evasion or delay. Monsieur Such-and-Such then drew from his pocket a small note which he gave to Harvey. This again directed him to another address on a prominent boulevard. Harvey took a carriage, as there were no trams on the boulevard of the address which had been given to him.
I rode perhaps a mile before I realized that I must watch for something.
Surely there was a reason for this little jaunt.
So I kept a careful search of all persons, places, and things. I rode another mile. I was out of the heart of the city and was going in a different direction. I was, in fact, practically skirting the city. I saw old churches, old buildings, some old Roman bridges across the Garonne, some ruined places, and then, at last, the old tower. There before me was the actual tower itself, the one I had seen in the picture at the professor's store in Paris. And, in rapture and doubt, I stood before that old tower known to Rosicrucians as the Donjon for many minutes with the feeling in my heart that somehow this was the goal. My search had ended.
What should be his approach? This was the question now dominant in Harvey's mind. How should he act on this occasion to truly portray his humility and due probity? His knocking on the door brought no response. It seemed that his heart was pounding more vigorously than his fist upon the door, for he had passed through the outer creaking gate in the wall surrounding the tower.
I gazed upward through the opening and shouted, "Hello!" Not very appropriate, I grant you. It was the telephone habit manifesting itself on impulse, I suppose. But it brought forth the soft but distinct, "Entrez, entrez," from an upper floor. I immediately began my ascent. I saw then that the stairs were made of stone, and as were the floors. The edges of the steps were deeply worn. I should judge that each stone was 3 inches lower at the deepest part of the curve. The walls, too, were of gray stone, the plaster or cement between the stones being gone in many places, and a moldy odor pervaded the atmosphere. As I ascended, I found the upper galleries were lighter, and I could distinguish shelves against the walls filled with old books.
Slowly, Harvey reached an upper room. There he found an array of antique chairs, a hand-carved desk upon which were scattered many papers, as though someone had been interrupted in his work but had intended to return to it. Harvey's musing about what he saw was interrupted by the appearance of an elderly gentleman with
a very long gray beard and pure white hair hanging to his shoulders, slightly curled.
Harvey, being self-conscious in the gentleman's presence, hastened to explain that he had been directed to the edifice and after knocking had heard someone call to him to enter. He went on to explain his purpose, his mission, in fact. The elderly gentleman listened, smiled sympathetically and encouragingly. He then stated, "You have earnestly sought the Rose Claw Order. You wish to enter the Sacred Brotherhood. Your wish may be granted, but what then? You will help in this great work? You will spread the work to your land? You wish for a Herculean task. I admire your courage, your bravery, and your determination." The venerable gentleman then revealed to Harvey many treasured documents. He disclosed mementos, instructions, scrolls from old mystery schools from which had sprung the Order Rosicrucis. He exhibited proclamations of the Order, signed by men whose names were prominent in the profane history of the world.
"And I saw the last oath of the Order, made by Lafayette before he came to America, the first Rosicrucian from France to come here. May the name ever remain sacred to the Order in America." And then I departed with more directions.
The next day, Harvey dutifully followed the instructions given him and made the required personal contact. But again, he was told how to arrive at a particular destination. This time, it was the old city of Tolosa.
Tolosa was the original Roman city of Toulouse.
At an old building, perhaps 2 centuries or more in age, Harvey presented his written credentials to someone who, it developed, was the archivist. He was then prepared for the event that was to follow. First, he was admonished to rest, to meditate. And at sunset, about 3 hours later, he would meet the officers of the Grand Lodge.
Later that night, I was initiated into the Order Rosicrucis. I crossed the threshold in the old lodge, in that very old building. I met the many officers. I took solemn pledges. I received the great blessing and was made a brother of the order as the witching hour of midnight was struck by the old chimes in the tower of the building.
Again, fortunately for Harvey Lewis, his father's business detained them both in Toulouse for several days. During this period, Frater Harvey Lewis attended his first Rosicrucian convocation. He was also permitted to see old tomes and manuscripts containing traditional principles and teachings of the Ordo Rosicrucis. Other works and languages of several lands, he was told, contained great illumination, but they were not made available to him at that time. However,
on the day I left Toulouse, I was given certain papers and documents to enable me to proceed with the spreading of the light in America.
The most venerable Grand Master of France, Monsieur L., then gave Harvey a charge. He admonished him regarding his responsibilities and obligations. He conferred upon him jewels and signs of authority. We quote in part from the charge of the Grand Master to Frater Louis. The charge in its entirety appears in the historical account of that event by Dr. Louis.
From time to time there will come to you those whom you will recognize by the signs indicated. They will add to your papers and devices until your working papers and tools are completed. The masters of the world will be glad to administer to your wants and your requirements from time to time.